turn on the
power on like these guys, those licensees, apparently.
Thank you all for coming. We'll find a seat. I'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. It's August 17th. This is the second meeting of the MARS Working Group. It's 2 p.m. and just so everybody knows, if you can speak up into your microphone so that the recording device can hear you, that would be great. If you're having trouble hearing anybody, please say something. Why don't we go ahead and go around and do introductions just to make sure we all know who everyone is for us. My name is Justine Forsyth Khan. I'm here representing the Interagency Rules Committee, and I am the chair of the committee.
I'm Patricia Winget, Minnesota Department of Health.
I'm Mary Lynn, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
I'm Melissa Patch, I'm with the Revisor's Office and work on the MARS Archive. I'm Maria Simonson, I'm a contracted analyst.
Ellen Farrell, Revisor's Office.
City Next, all the Revisor's Office.
Paul Mariak, Revisor's Office. Revisor's Secretary of State's Office.
Katie Lynn, Office of Administrative Hearings.
Wendy Lee, Department of Industry.
Beth Sheffer, Department of Transportation.
Jody Pope, Campaign Finance Board.
Rebecca Gaspard, Board of Cosmetology.
And then we have a couple guests in the room as well.
Ryan in the Revisor's Office.
John Holt was House Representative, Speaker of the Finance Committee.
Okay, welcome. All right, our first order of business is to review the meeting minutes from our meeting from July, and there's a copy in your folder. They were also posted on the website. Give you a minute to quickly review them if you haven't already. Do you have any changes or edits?
Yes, I believe a decision was also made that this group is going to operate under the as if we are covered by the open meeting law. I can see that in the minutes. Was that was a decision I thought that was made?
Yeah, we did discuss that, although we likely aren't required to, that we would follow the best practices.
Sorry, I can't hear you. Would you mind moving your mic closer?
Yes, I believe we did discuss that, although we didn't believe we were required to follow the open meeting law, we would follow it as best practice.
Yeah, I think we didn't decide whether we were required to or not, as I recall, but that we thought we should follow the open meeting law.
Correct.
That's my recollection. So I would request that the minutes be amended to reflect that.
Okay. Any other changes? Everyone's had a chance to review them. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve as amended.
Okay, second?
Second.
Okay, minutes are approved. All right. We have a fairly ambitious agenda list here. So we're going to move on and have a discussion with Melissa Patch leading from the Revisor's Office regarding some of the materials that she provided that detail the in-house versus build options for us for the future system.
Yeah, I guess the first thing I would like to do is kind of describe at a high level what it means to build a software system and what it means to purchase a software system. I'm not sure how involved anyone has been as far as making those types of decisions in the past. But pretty much every software system is going to have a list of requirements of what the system must do. And then you can go down two separate paths. You can decide to custom build it and build everything in-house, or you can purchase a product that basically meets all or as many of your requirements as possible. And in the case of purchasing a system, it's very important to ensure that the purchased system is able to do everything you want it to do. Because there's not a lot of different ways that modify a purchase system. So you have to be really careful that you know what you're buying. In a build solution, you are able to kind of stitch together components that meet your specific needs, but then you're responsible for how those components work together. So if you're looking at any system is going to have requirements that fit into different components. MARS has content management, reporting and searching, notifications, preservation, security, all of those things are detailed in the requirements. And the software is always going to be kind of broken down into various components. A purchase solution will have components that are linked together for you. And so you're going to have a vendor that is responsible for linking those pieces together. And those pieces do exactly what the vendor configured them to do. In a purchase solution, you can take those components and you can write them exactly to meet your needs, or say notification, sending email. If you know that that's something that's industry standard, you can purchase a component to handle that piece for you. You don't have to build it from scratch. We don't want to reinvent the wheel, but making those different features work together is what you're going to be doing in a build type solution in-house. But you're responsible for how those pieces are connected, your staff that supports your build solution. So when you're looking at these two paths, you really have to, one, figure out, can a purchase solution meet part of my requirements? And if it can't, can I tweak it so that it can meet my requirements? A good example when we were looking at the MARS pilot project was text searching. So every single product out there allowed you to search text in PDFs. You upload your PDF and you could search it. But one of the things we found with a purchase solution is you couldn't highlight the terms that matched your search within that PDF. So it would tell you, here, I have this, you know, notice of intent to adopt that matched your search term, but it couldn't tell you where. You would have to, you know, read through and find it. And although our beta system does not have a feature to actually navigate to the specific match, the revisor's office does in our bill search. And so if we built in-house, we could give you guys that kind of capability, you know, highlighting within the PDF. By default, you can't get that in a purchase solution. Whether or not that's an important feature for you guys is kind of up to you to determine. But it's those type of things is kind of what you need to look for. You know, would we want this to work differently? If you do, you have to customize this purchase product, which is something that you can do if it doesn't meet your specifications. The one thing that you have to be aware of is if you say you don't like the way the searching works in the product and you want to add your own custom searching, you're basically creating your own integration point. So you're taking away what they have linked in their nice ecosystem, and you're saying, oh no, I want to replace it with something else, and you're replacing that link. And while that can be done, it creates an area that is difficult to maintain in the future, I would say. So if you go to upgrade your product later on, they may have made changes to the product in that area, and you're going to have to deal with that later on. So, I mean, that's just kind of one thing to look for when you're looking at a purchase solution. And on the other hand, if you're building in-house, you know, you can take that search capability that you like, that you custom built, and you can link it together with other components. You're responsible for all of that, how those things play together, how they function. And that, you know, that can be a good thing because it's fully flexible, but it can also be, you know, it's an added burden. I think if you look at the cost estimates, you'll find that you would need a software developer to build in-house versus, you know, purchasing a solution. So you're definitely more responsible for everything in a build solution, but you do have flexibility to make the system do exactly what you want. another thing to think about is what you want to do as far as how long it takes to get the end product. A purchase solution, if it fits your needs and it works exactly the way you need to do your business, you're going to get the full product a lot faster than if you have to custom build it. Another thing is just requirements in general. When we evaluated the different products available to meet the requirements that were outlined in the final report, there was no solution you could purchase that would meet each and every one of those. And if you guys are okay with cutting out some requirements or possibly changing your workflows, a purchase solution could save, time in getting the full feature set, or just in general the amount of responsibility that your internal staff essentially would take on. I don't know if there's any specific areas that you guys need clarification on as far as what the differences between the two paths are. If you had any questions about this, we could go through this entire list of build versus buy that I gave to you. It would probably be a little bit much.
I just have a more general question.
Sure.
So let's say this group were to decide, the most important functionality,
mm-hmm.
but also put in another group what would be really nice to have in the future.
Uh-huh.
So would your recommendation be, even if there was a purchase product that would meet the sort of immediate needs,
mm-hmm.
if we want to allow for future expansion, it would be better to go with the built system?
I think it depends on how in line a purchase solution could be with your requirements. I think when I look at build, I don't look at building every single component from scratch. I mean, there are little things out there that handle sending emails, and then there's another thing that handles electronic workflow. I think built in-house, we would want to leverage those products out there. We're not going to build them from scratch. But with a purchase component, if you do want, the enhanced features somewhere down the line, you're probably going to have to purchase a product that includes them from day one. Whereas you could add them on later on in a built solution, but you also have to be careful because, depending on how you implement or design the software for the initial release, it could be easier or harder to add things on top of it. So
So it sounds like you probably would really need to see what this group decided on in terms of what's the critical features versus what
apps
would be.
And then evaluate what types of products are out there that would meet those immediate needs.
Thank you.
So let's just follow on that. So let's assume a system life for the next big redo of 15, 20 years. What is the likely life of a purchased product over that time period, and what costs are there generally in purchased products down the line? So, for example, if we say, your model is obsolete, not supported anymore, but we'll upgrade you for another $100,000, kind of.
It's really hard to predict. I would say what commercial software is going to do in the next 10 years. I know when we were evaluating products for the pilot project, we kind of had 10 years as our target for how long software would last. I think that's kind of a very long shelf life when you're looking at software.
How about licensing fees, yearly licensing fees,
yeah.
In addition to the purchase?
So yearly licensing fees, just in general for our budgeting purposes, we estimate that they will go up 3% a year. However, in the case that you mentioned where the product is no longer supported, sometimes companies will charge you a premium in order to continue service on a product that they said that they will no longer support. And then they will also come to a point where, even if you pay us, we're no longer going to support this. So that is definite risk going with a fully purchased product. But yet there's really no way to know for certain where the technology is going to be 10 years from now.
I say this in the background of our experience at Center for Your State, where we spent about 10 years being very dissatisfied with purchased products which the vendor promised to customize for us, but simply wanted to sell us when they sold the last state. And then finally we got to a staff augmentation situation where we built it ourselves, and then we have staff, permanent staff, who maintain and do upgrades. And we've had that for now that's 13 years, and a good experience on the Dell. You're right, it's hard to tell where software is going, but there are a number of issues with software from the beginning to the very end. You are working with somebody else's product, and they usually let you know.
And I think that kind of leads me to one of the points that I made earlier, which was you have to decide what's important to you. Is it the life of the product? Is it going to be the flexibility, the time it takes to build it? There's all sorts of considerations, and the document that we prepared for this meeting describes a lot of different consideration areas, and then you know what types of things you need to kind of be looking at. But it really depends on where the importance lies to the group.
So if we have you build it in-house, which I understand is what your recommendation is in this. Is that correct? Did I read this correctly?
So the final report outlined a purchased product that was customized, and then we also just came up with an in-house cost estimate.
Oh, okay. So there'll be ongoing costs for maintenance that way too.
There's ongoing maintenance costs for either path. Like I mentioned, the build solution, we would probably purchase select components just because if you were going to build this entire system from scratch, every brick by brick, I mean, that would be very cost prohibitive and require a lot of developers to do. There are people out there who have already developed email notifications or electronic workflow, electronic signatures, and so we would piece together the components that you are needing for this project when you need to with an in-house build solution.
Okay.
Melissa, I'm hearing kind of some main broad categories of priorities, and I'm wondering if this might be a good time to have a discussion about possibly how we might rank some of those priorities, at least at this point, knowing that they could shift. And if you have some others you'd like to add to the list, let me know. I'm hearing cost, obviously, is a big factor given our charge to determine a possible funding avenue. The timeline piece, how quickly do we want this product to be put in place? Do we have the in-house build, from what I get from the timeline, seems to be like 2 to 3 years out based on the schedule that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
We have capabilities of the system, you know, making sure if we're not sure what everything is exactly right now, making sure we're building in the capacity for modifications or flexibility or change. And then I guess flexibility maybe is wrapped into that, or maybe separate, so that we have the chance to use the system, see where we need to make changes, and know that we'll be able to make those changes, whereas with the purchase product, you know, you have to kind of, seems like you need a little more crystal ball gazing, perhaps. Are there any other kind of big categories that anyone else is thinking of? Or does anyone have any kind of initial thoughts on those priorities?
Well, maybe it's a subset of what you've already suggested, Justine, but it seems to me that there are two big things we have to decide. One is the official record keeping, and then the tracking system, which are listed in the legislation. So those are huge. Mm-hmm. So how those look, I think we'll have to decide. But they fit into what you just said.
Yes, they do very much. I suppose we could take this as a point to maybe address some of the discussion items and then circle back to Leanne, if that would kind of help us be able to move forward. Maybe I'll just jump around a little bit in case this discussion can help us refine our priorities. So I'm looking at number 5, and then we'll come back to our conversation about priorities in 4. We have some discussion items that were suggested or brought up as things to just clarify. So we can go through them and feel free to share your thoughts. And I'll do my best to share what I remember the small group discussing, and anyone that was part of that, please jump in as well. So the first one is just a brief scope clarification of what the working group's charge is. Specifically looking at the legislative language. Does everyone have a copy of that?
I brought copies to pass out. I don't know if I have enough copies for everybody, but I have a number of copies and can share if you don't have them all.
So while those are going around, the legislation includes a description of the MARS system itself. In subdivision 2, and then obviously it lays out our duties as well. There was just a question about whether or not the description of the MARS system in this subdivision, as it relates to our duties, you know, limited at all the scope of our work, just something that we might want to take a look at.
Justine, I have some related comments. If I don't know if this would be the best time, you want me to wait and speak later. Just concerns that the agency has, and it sort of ties in with the scope.
Okay.
So it's up to you when you want me to talk about that.
Sorry. Why don't you go ahead, and we'll see if it kind of sparks further questions.
Thank you. So as I was reviewing all of these materials and looking at the statute, I realized that really there's two different kinds of systems that you can talk about. You can talk about an informational system, and you can talk about a transactional system. And as far as the Department of Labor and Industry goes, what we are really interested in is an informational system, because our top priorities are making sure there's public access, making sure the public is informed, and storage of the official rulemaking records. Those are the key things for us. And I think that ties in with the legislative language as well. Our focus is more of an informational system. When I go through all the detailed requirements, it seems like it's a transactional system. And right now, we do a lot. We are good at doing rulemaking. We can do our rulemaking. We're not a huge agency, but we have an awful lot of rulemaking. In fact, beginning with the year 2018, when new model building codes come out, we legislatively need to amend or rewrite at least 11 chapters of Minnesota rules for building code, plus the plumbing code, the electrical code, and other work comp rules will go in there as well. So I'm concerned that we get something that will help us. And something that would help us would be the informational system. I'm concerned that the cost of a transactional system would be so high that we run the risk of getting nothing. And it's better to get something, the informational piece, than nothing. And so our concern, I'm quite frankly concerned that how our agency would be hit with costs of a transactional system. We're not a big agency. And I know that, but I know that that's the second piece for discussion, but it's concerning to me that a decision would be made to go forward with a transactional system before we figured out how to pay for it.
Looking at the statute subdivision 2, the next to last sentence says, system that serves a single internet location for the public to track rulemaking progress and access the official rulemaking environment. So I guess the question is, how do you track rulemaking progress without a, what I think we're calling a transactional system? There has to be some transactional system in order to make that progress evident on the single web page on the Mars system.
It seems to me that what could happen is the agency's control when they file documents on the system. Like at key times, they would file documents when they have the request for comments, when they have their notice of intent to adopt. They would file the documents at that time, and the public would have access to them at that time. It would not be required. The agency, certainly our rulemakers, do not need to be able to go on a system to create a document. Do not need to be able to go on a system to tell us, gee, this hearing has to be these many days. You know, all those things may be nice for the future. But what I'm thinking of, and what I would like to see, is us look at, well, let's look at what's the most important first, and maybe find out what the cost is of that, have an informational system, but think about having that system such that it could be modified in the future to convert it, to allow some of the more transactional things.
When you're saying informational system, are you envisioning the MARS system serving as the official rulemaking record?
Yes.
Wanted to verify.
Right. It's exactly the sense that mm-hmm. that you're read, that
okay.
the public would be able to go on, be able to see what's happening in the rulemaking. It would be the official rulemaking record. But we wouldn't be using it to draft our documents. We wouldn't need reminders of when we had to send out something. It wouldn't control the rule writer's work. It would allow for public access and for information. And if we want these other things in the future, at additional cost, of course, perhaps the way to look at it, if not cost prohibitive, is to look at the system allowing those things in the future rather than building them in right away.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point, and that's where a discussion of the different requirements and refining what we believe is a base for having a functional, useful system beyond what we have now to fulfill the language in Subdivision 2 that, at least as I read it, it seems like it refers to both the official rulemaking record as well as the requirement for agencies to maintain a rulemaking docket.
Now, as I read, I agree with you that it sounds sort of like a docket to me, but that relates to one of your next points, and that is item C, not duplicating agency work. The only thing I see in the statute that the legislature has said that they're going to let us, the agencies, avoid or get out of if the system is in place is preserving the official rulemaking record. It doesn't say the agencies won't have to maintain the docket. And I'm fine with having this and having the agencies have to maintain their docket, but I don't want this group to be in a position where we're assuming the legislature will reduce the requirements imposed on agencies other than this preserve the official rulemaking record requirement.
And if you were in the smaller working group, feel free to jump in, but what I remember that we discussed as sort of hopes and dreams was that possibly down the road the MARS system could not only serve as the official rulemaking record so that agencies can know the records are maintained there, in a much more secure way than, you know, our paper boxes and our really creepy black, you know, no lights, no climate control room in our office building, because we're not in the, you know, we don't have an archival system. And so this would be a better way to have everything in a single repository, as well as possibly, we just discussed it as an option, that it could serve as the agency's rulemaking docket, but not necessarily. Those decisions weren't made for sure, and I don't know that we have to decide that for sure as a group, but if we wanted to preserve the option to have the system possibly function like that in the future, we could certainly talk about that.
And I think
lastly, if it works well for those two options, it could possibly serve as a way for people to fulfill their annual reporting requirement, because everything that they would possibly submit to the legislature regarding any rulemaking that had been done the previous year would be right there, and we could just direct their attention to, you know, our kind of neatly packaged system. But again, nothing was finally decided. We had just kind of envisioned that it would be great to have a system that if it could meet all those needs, great.
Sure. As I read through the list of potential requirements, there's lots of other things that it could serve if the legislature were to decide that. For example, if there's subscriber lists, maybe that could take the place of the agency's duty to maintain rulemaking lists. I mean, the options are vast, but let's look at what we've got now.
So perhaps what we could add to our list of possible priorities is looking at an information sort of capturing system or holding system versus plus some transactional things that we decide would be most useful.
Or accessed by the public, right.
So I have a question about what you're terming the transactional system. So if a member of the public or a legislator wanted to sign up to receive notices of a particular rulemaking and any developments in that rulemaking terms would actually be filed, would you consider that transactional?
We'd have to look at, as a group. So, for example, some of these.
Wendy, can I interrupt you for a minute? Sorry, we're trying to get the sound disruption.
Perhaps I could just turn off all the microphones until somebody's actually talking and then turn it on. That might be because it's getting feedback from something electronic somewhere, or it's struggling to try and hear somebody's what I think. So we'll try that maybe. Sorry.
I think the information for the public is truly important. But what I'm talking about are things like, we'll give notice to the governor's office. We'll allow you to download a template and create a document. We'll tell you what date should be there. Mm-hmm. Those sorts of things that are more helpful, quite frankly, the agency rulemaker. And don't get me wrong. I realize they'd be helpful to agency rulemakers. But is that within the scope of what we most need? And when I'm looking at the cost and looking at what our agency most needs, what we are most interested in is an informational system for the public and a storage for official rulemaking records. So those are my two bits.
Okay, thank you. Paul?
Let me confuse the issue. You're framing it precisely the way that we approach it. We're involved in this because people looked at the statuses and said, that's wonderful, this provides wonderful information.
You need to turn off your microphone. There we go. Thank you.
What we're looking for is a way to capture the entire rulemaking record, digitize it, preserve it, make it available for public. And in addition, the stuff that you have in the status system is very useful. At a minimum, I think that's what you're saying. We felt an obligation when we looked at what this would cost and what it would look like to say, we have to do some projection here. And are there other things that people might want in the future? And our initial decisions may preclude the ability to offer those. So we didn't want to do that. But it's entirely up to you or the legislature or whoever decides to fund this to figure out what additional functionality is needed or wanted. Do you want electronic notifications? The ideal system for an agency that doesn't do much rulemaking would not only capture the record, but provide the prompts, provide templates, provide all that. That if that's what you want, those are some of the requirements that we need to know. But what you're saying is, you know, there are core requirements, and they will probably be requirements that will allow us to capture and display the rulemaking record as it exists now, and perhaps some additional status information. If there's a, you know, my bill's equivalent, anybody can sign up at any time. The Department of Labor and Industry had a rule, you get a notification. We may be able to do that. That's why when our discussion last week about the importance of a content management system, if that sort of functionality is not desired, you're overbuying to buy a content management system. And so that's what we had the discussion of. If you look at the report, and it has a phase one and phase two, it's a false economy to say, well, we'll just do phase one now. You're really not saving anything because you're overbuying. You're buying that capacity that's unused in phase one. The advantage of a built system would be the built system could support the requirements that you feel are important without adding additional functionality that you may not want at all, or you may not want just now. But it has the flexibility then to perhaps add a content management system, add all the other stuff. So I think the way you're framing it is precisely the issue that you need to deal with.
Melissa?
I guess I would just add that what you consider transactional, I think throughout the requirements and the report and how we have it broken down into phase one, phase two, is actually workflow. Just kind of the comments you made about, you know, making it 60 days to send an email or alert you of the that you need to have a hearing. Those are workflow related things. So I think if you do, when you read through the requirements and look at how we broke it down into phase one, phase two, all of those things are kind of the second phase where you would get the electronic notifications and workflow and templating and things like that. So unless I'm misunderstanding exactly what you were talking about.
So I guess I thought it was more than that, because when I looked at I know we're going to get to the scheduling recommendations, but it was broken down into different types of rulemaking proceedings. If it's merely an informational system, where you don't need to worry about the workflow for the different proceedings, doesn't that affect phase one as well?
I think the importance of identifying what the workflows are is to make sure that we have all the requirements of phase one. The system driving the workflows does not need to happen initially. I mean, certainly if you ever do want the workflows to be automated, you would really need to scrutinize those workflows that we presented you with. But the importance of knowing what they are now is more so that we know what the requirements of the system are, regardless of whether you do an electronic version of that or not.
Bert?
Wendy raised a number of questions, but one of them was regarding documents. And in looking at this language, what the system is supposed to be, it uses the phrase single internet location a number of times. And so I think that it is contemplated that the system would replace the individual agency docket pages. Now, of course, you can't do that in here in this legislation because we have to come up with the system. Presumably, when we came up with the system and there was a viable way of funding it, that kind of legislation would probably along with funding would be put in to say to eliminate that individual requirement, because in fact if you want one system, you don't want an agency mm-hmm. website based rulemaking document. You want a centralized set of information. And so even if you don't do anything but upload by brute force to this web page, which would also be charged, I think. I think you would do that and you would avoid having your own document.
I agree, and I think that would ultimately, hopefully, be what the legislature would do.
I think you signaled that in here by using that phrase.
Right, no, I agree. Obviously, there's going to be a little bit of overlap time while we're still maintaining documents. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But I do agree with you that this should lead the legislature to remove the requirement of each agency making a
decision. Well, that's just my impression reading this language, and this is the language of the legislature. agreed to do so.
Yeah, I think that would be the ultimate goal with modifications to the statute, that it's not, right now it requires an agency to maintain and an agency in Chapter 14 to do certain things. Any other thoughts on that, Patricia?
Well, I'm looking at, again, looking at track rulemaking progress. I understand what Wendy's saying about transactional, but I'm also thinking of the pages we already have. And I think that there's a wide range of what we could do that's tracking rulemaking progress that may or may not go with the whole detailed workflow situation. Because if you look at a rulemaking project that is already started, you can clearly see where you are in the process, but it doesn't do all of these very sophisticated readouts, and it requires you to understand the process to know that, okay, request for comments means we're at the first stage and, you know, something else has to happen. Or when you get to the bottom and you see the notice of adoption, that means it's done. I mean, but that, to me, is one form of tracking rulemaking progress. Whether that is what we want to do is a different question than whether we're satisfying the statute. So I think we have a wide variety of a wide range that we need to narrow down, and this document six, these 16 pages, I see as, you know, one way of doing it. But this is not a decision that's made. Is that, do I have that right?
You're asking if the requirements are final.
Well, I mean, I think that this is one view of how it could work. Number 16, pages. I mean, it's document number six.
Those were the requirements that we came up with when we wrote the final report that would build the ideal system.
Right. So we have a lot of latitude between what we're absolutely required to do and what's in this document.
Exactly, which is, what the working group here has been charged with, which is refining that list of requirements, coming up with a final list of requirements. And, the cost estimates that you have, both the one that was in the final report that has the purchase system and then the in-house build estimate, they are in flux until that list is completely final. And I think that's just an important thing that this group has to keep on their radar. Not all requirements are going to affect costs. Just because you think it would make things cheaper doesn't necessarily mean that it would. So I do think starting with, figuring out what you want the system to do will give you a clearer picture of the, funding that you'll need to request, and it is probably the best area to start with.
Paul?
I have a real problem with this, because when I would discuss these, the flowchart, I'd say, why are you spending so much time doing this? We're just capturing documents. We know what the documents are. But from the developer's perspective, they need to know if there are any showstoppers out there. Because you can't recommend a software solution unless you know the universe of possibilities. And so when you look at those workflows, it's not a suggestion that we're going to build a system that will follow this, display this, tie you to it. This is the necessary groundwork that they had to go through to make sure that they understood all of the requirements in the system. And it took me a long time to really understand that, because I kept coming back, why are we doing this? So what? If we defined the expedited rule process largely correct, but we missed some of the timing, what's the difference? We're still capturing documents there. But that's the answer. They need to know if there are any variations or showstoppers that will affect any recommendations that we make for the final product. So we're not suggesting that you follow the workflow that's there, or the product is going to be tied to that. They just want to understand what this is.
Thank you, Paul. Are there any other questions or lingering thoughts about scope or the group's role? Okay. We might have kind of covered B and C. Chain of document submission. Wendy, you're going to have to jog my memory what you were.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to, one concern that we have is that our agency is going to want to be able to control the timing of the document submission. I'll just give an example as to why this was someone else in our agency brought this up as a concern. So there was a situation where we had a rulemaking and we requested approval of the additional notice plan, and we got a preliminary a letter back where the judge, and I don't remember, I'm not trying to impugn any judge, or but I think it was a fairly inexperienced judge who sent back an order that said something like, you need to publish this in all local papers. And if we would not want that to, but then of course we were able to have through subsequent correspondence, get that clarified, etc. Our concern would be if that were immediately to be posted by OAH, there'll be suddenly a lot of inquiries, concern when they don't see it in their local paper, etc. So the agency really would be want to control up till during the preliminary stages, control loading, uploading documents, and what is uploaded when. So that was the concern in terms of, and that was just one example, but other people raised other examples in terms of the order. For example, another example would be when we send things to OAH, we send a draft sonar. And one concern was, though it's a public document, if somebody asked for it, we would provide it. We don't necessarily want to upload that right away until we upload the file sonar. Because again, that would raise questions. It would be extra agency work, was the indication I got from the people who were doing these large number of rulemakings in within a 2-year period. So that was the chain, that was what I brought up on that.
Thank you, Wendy, for jogging my memory. I believe the intention of the system is that it would be up to the agency to upload the document. They would have total control related to security and access and authorization, and that a document would only go live on the MARS system when they uploaded it themselves, and they would upload the final completed signed. No drafts would have to be uploaded. Correspondence back and forth would not be uploaded. It would be the final, whatever the documents were, part of the official record, whatever would be posted on your agency website or your docket, that's what would go up there, not the kind of supporting documents of the back and forth.
So I'm trying to figure out, would it be the expectation of OAH that they communicate with the agency when they're communicating in writing, they're communicating through the system?
No.
Or not?
Yeah, I don't
think that's clear yet, right?
I don't recall that being ever envisioned. The OAH, any entities that are communicating with each other would still communicate with each other directly. They wouldn't communicate through the MARS system.
The reason I ask that is, of course, that those letters will eventually become part of the official rulemaking record, so that we would not need to order to upload everything that will eventually be in the rulemaking record at the time of the document creation.
Correct.
That's what I wanted to clarify.
Correct.
Thank you.
Any other thoughts on that topic? Okay, the last item in the discussion, just something I wanted to ask the group after we touched on these issues, if we felt that we had enough clarity and grounding in the legislative charge, or if it would be helpful to come up with some kind of guiding principles. Just, we don't have to make a decision now, but just wanted to throw that out there if there were thoughts about having some strong kind of guidelines that we might follow.
I'm hearing a strong minimalist argument, and I wonder if we should have two tracks, at least to start with, and that is minimalist requirements. Just what are the very various problems of what would meet the charge. And then we can evaluate other things as being, I don't want to say nice to have, because as we would characterize as luxuries. They may not be luxuries if we decide for something other than the minimalist approach, but some other track that would have a more robust kind of system.
Possibly a next level, so to speak, a higher level of complexity, perhaps. I think that would be a good baseline to keep in mind.
Maybe kind of building on that, I think I hear you saying that we should decide what we want first, and then we can find out how much it costs. But for me, there are some things that I don't know if I want them yet until I know how much they cost. And so I was wondering if, you know, I don't have a software development background, if there are certain categories of features that you know automatically are going to be really expensive. Like, I imagine that being able to sign up for personal notices is probably going to be really expensive because that person would need some kind of personal logon, or you know. So, are there any kind of general categories of things that are cheap that I wouldn't expect to be cheap, or things that are more expensive?
I think it's hard to quantify exactly what is more expensive versus not. I do know that with a purchase system, like Paul mentioned before, you're overbuying. You're buying all your features. So it's a system that has a workflow engine. It's a system that has notifications and all of that. What I can tell you is the components that have costs associated with them are broken down a little bit more in the in-house build estimate. Some of them are expensive, but I wouldn't necessarily consider them optional. Security is one that has the potential to have a large cost associated with it, but you don't necessarily want to forgo security. I know that there are various levels of security, and you know, we had a lot of discussions in the working group or the pilot project about, you know, redacted content, and we never came up with, you know, firm security requirements for such content. And so, you know, that's where I'm saying, depending on that layer, you know, you may have added cost, you may not. But workflow is definitely an area. Notifications is an area that has a cost associated with it. Digital signatures is another kind of area that has cost. Most of the other things with, you know, heavy associated costs do have to do with the security aspects, which I think we need refinement on requirements to really say what level of security is needed for this project, and that may affect the cost levels as well.
So if we tell you that we'll redact everything in-house and only upload documents that are public, then that would affect how much we would need to spend on security. Is that what you mean, or
I think you're thinking along the right path. So I think what we have right now, the way we envisioned it, was that there is, you know, a redacted content that you guys would actually handle the redaction. We don't have prices for a software package that what you could actually electronically redact, but so say you just took a Sharpie and marked out a copy, scanned it in. I think the question there becomes, does the system hold both the redacted content and the non-redacted content, or just the redacted content? Because depending on what's required there will affect what security we have to do. Because, we can easily say, okay, yeah, the full rulemaking record has both the redacted and the non-redacted version, so we have to store both in the system. But the public can only ever see the redacted content. You know, there's things we can do that are probably not super expensive so that, you know, we can prevent the public from seeing them, but then if it's such sensitive information that internal employees that are not in your agency can't see it, so because the system is done by the revisor staff, as it's stated in the law there, and maybe only your agency has the ability to see the content that was redacted. Maybe the revisor staff can't ever see it. Then we need a different level of security so that our technical staff don't have access to it.
And that gets to the other piece of it, which is logins and passwords
exactly.
and permissions.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this because our appointments system just spent time working on, we have that where agency staff, so each of you in your agency has someone who deals with the appointments that the boards and commissions that your agency has. You might want to talk to them about how they access our system, because that might be how we plan on accessing this system, because we have people in the agencies uploading information on vacant positions into this system that we run. So that's sort of similar to uploading the rulemaking document, and we're going to do that into MARS. And so they have permissions to do certain things, and there are different levels of permissions. And so that would be part of your question about attachment. Document, and that can be done very precisely. So it might be that only the person who worked on the rulemaking really gets to see everything, you know, and everybody else sees the document. But you can do that with permissions. I don't know that that's a terribly expensive part of the process. It can be set up. But would you characterize that as a major expense?
I think it can be handled in multiple ways. I mean, so the data stored in the database, if your database administrator, it's okay that they can see that content, then yeah, it can just be permissions at the application level and you're right. But if it's the case where the revisor's office has that in their system and you never want our database administrator, or maybe legally our database administrator can't ever see that data, then it has to be an encrypted database. So I think that's a question for what legal requirements surround that, and I think there's probably questions since this is going to be held in a legislative office and it's executive data that maybe have to be worked out.
Wendy?
Thank you. I'm just thinking that maybe there's another alternative that we should at least consider, and that is that there is some data that's redacted, but it's not every rulemaking. In fact, it's probably only one in, I'm hearing reverberations here, it's just my voice, I guess. It's only one in 15 or one in 20 or one in 50 rulemakings that would have redacted data. So one possibility, since we're going to need to go to the legislature anyways, would be make a recommendation that the agency only need to retain permanently the public information from the official rulemaking record. Because we're going to need the legislature to modify the official rulemaking requirement anyways. If the legislature is agreeable to that, then nobody has to keep the unredacted, the very limited, extremely rare unredacted data, and only the public data needs to be maintained. And then that cuts out that entire expense of that whole feature, which is sounds like an expensive feature to me. Is that right?
If we truly had to encrypt our database so that our database admins could not see that redacted content, yes, that could be an expensive feature. Right now, I'm not clear. I'm not a lawyer. I'm a software developer. But I'm not clear, you know, what needs to be kept in that case of redaction for the official rulemaking record.
Of course, what we could do is recommend that public only needs to be saved. And if the legislature did not agree with that, then the agency would be responsible only for retaining the unredacted, very small portion of the rulemaking record as a backup, rather than putting in a lot of money for something very rare. That's just an option to think about.
I think that's a good option to consider. Any other lingering thoughts on that last conversation, or go ahead, Jody.
I just wanted to throw in, it seems like it's a really good idea if we all have in the back of our minds statutory changes, maybe small ones that we could have a list of that would, you know, lower the costs, because I think they would like those a lot, or just make it easier, and that might help us if we all have that in mind.
It's a great idea. I'd like to circle back to the list of priorities we were briefly talking about. Before we move on to number four, Leanne, just to see if there are any other thoughts about priorities we want to consider as we move forward hearing the conversations Again, so far I have cost, I have timeline of implementation, I have capabilities of the system, which I think is quite broad and could encompass things that we were just discussing, like possible security and redaction and things that could or could not impact cost one way or the other. We have flexibility of the system, the ability to modify down the road as the system expands, and then sort of a priority of the idea that Bert and Wendy have been talking about, you know, the informational system, kind of our baseline system that we're thinking of, versus a higher level, more sophisticated option that might include some transactional items down the road. Are there any other kind of bigger priorities that come to mind? We can always add to the list, but we can use this as a lens as we're reviewing the requirements and refining them. Okay, well, do we need to take a break? Brief break? Or is everyone ready to
power ahead?
Okay, let's take a 10-minute break. And we'll adjourn for 10 minutes.
So I think the problem with recording is possibly the two devices. So I don't know if we should stop.
All right. The meeting is re-adjourned. Let's go ahead and hear from Leanne. She's one of the revisor's contractors, and she has come up with an approach for us to consider and possibly implement for a timeline of reviewing all the requirements and having discussions about them to help us make determinations.
I know many of you, some of you I don't know yet, many of you were involved in the pilot, so I am the person that helped with the models and working through the requirements. I think that what you've been discussing so far has really given me a better understanding of where your values are and some of the options that are out there that might be a little different than how the final recommendations came through, so that this is very helpful to hear before I speak to what we need to do with requirements. I think that given everything, I would still recommend that you analyze broadly, knowing that you can always implement narrowly, meaning that if you have a good understanding of the requirements, you could still just implement a piece and then grow from there. So I think there might be this feeling that maybe we should just define the minimal and then build that. But without that foresight, we might not be future-proofing what we need. So you can make different decisions about those two layers. So I still recommend looking at requirements broadly. Also, if you really understand what you need, that is going to help you develop costs. So you'll know what the cost estimate would be the more fully you flesh out the requirements. It could also be that you might only have one bite of the apple to get funding. It might be helpful to know what you want now and what you might want later. Also, you do have some earmarked time right now to focus on requirements, so that would be another reason to really tackle it right now. If you decide to buy a product, in that case, there would be more gotchas by missed requirements. So by going into that decision and not having fully fleshed out and agreed to requirements, there's a risk that you might buy a product that's not the best fit. If you decide to build, we still want to know what the full requirements are over time so that we can build in for growing and extending your system to those future capabilities. So for all of those reasons, I would still recommend that you really think through all of the requirements, knowing that that doesn't mean you would need to implement them all. Any questions or thoughts on that before I move forward? Right, so you'll see that I put together a general idea of what we might do to really knock this out, flesh out all of those requirements. Where we would start is really, where I would recommend we start is to make some foundational decisions about terminology, some high-level decisions that will be able to be applied to other areas. So Melissa and I will work hard to present the different requirements to you in a way that we can then take that back and apply that in other places and only ask you once. So for instance, we can take just one process and walk through it and ask you, how do you envision interacting with the system? We did flesh out what we call user stories in your packet for one process, and that's with the idea that we do have all the bells and whistles. We have the transactional system, we have the workflow and all of that. You might tell us, no, that's not how it will work, or maybe that's not how it will work initially. So by just walking through one process, we can identify how you should be supported now and into the future. And then knowing that for that one process, then Melissa and I can take that back and only bring back unique questions to save you time and make good use of your time. So that's the thought, is that we'd start out with foundational decisions. We'd work through one process pretty in a lot of detail. And then we would continue to bring back the remaining gaps, the remaining questions, until we've worked through all of the requirements. So looking at this looks a little daunting, but it is with that in mind that we would start with the foundational, work through one process, and then work through those other processes and decisions that need to be made. So this is a guesstimate. We could find that we don't need all this time. We could find that we're pressed for time. But this would be a starting point. If this is just too much time and you place a hard constraint on how much time you wanted to allot to requirements, then we'll do the highest priority things first. You know, we'll work with that. Whatever time you think you can give to this. But it is feeling like maybe 8 half-day sessions would be what seems to fit for working through all of the requirements. That's also with the thought that some of you are new, and we would need to make sure that everybody's on the same page so we can really start from where we left off. We would need to cover all of the requirements. A couple other points. One is that if some discussions don't meet everyone, we could be careful about the use of your time. For instance, we haven't worked through the Department of Labor and Industry process or the DNR. We wouldn't need to have everybody in on that discussion, for instance. So we could try to be careful about who is invited to each discussion. Another thing we could do is the ever popular give you homework. We can talk to you about that as we go on, whether you wanted to do that. Some things we could hand off and you could decide on outside the meeting. So those would be a couple ways to save you money. Save you time, sorry. Money's good to save too, but save you time. All right. So what do you think? What are your impressions or your thoughts? Does this feel like, you know, way more than you can get, or it's doable, or?
Leanne, were you envisioning, just to clarify, that these would be in addition to our larger group meetings, or in the interest of time, would we try to fit these meetings in before coming back, or how do you envision bringing the information? Do we need to bring the information from the workshops back to a larger group at regular intervals, or should we use the time we had allotted for the next meeting to focus on workshops? Just curious about that.
Sure. Well, I can throw out a possibility, and there are many ways, you know, to go about this, but what we might do is have smaller work groups in between now and the next meeting. Maybe the first 3 workshops that are represented on the sheet, so that we can have that smaller group come up with recommendations for those foundational decisions, as well as work through one general process and come up with recommendations that are going to affect how we treat everything else. So maybe between now and then, a smaller work group could tackle that information, basic information, and then bring it back at the next meeting with recommendations. Does that sound like a good plan?
Go ahead.
Okay, so this is one model of how to do it, the workshops.
Is there another model that would be much less time involved? This looks like we're getting way, way, way down into the nitty-gritty, and I was hoping, because we'd already done so much work last year, that we would be ready to... I don't want to... of course, we have to bring people up to date, but we have people who are really swift at getting up to date here that are involved, so I'm not speaking for you people, but I also know that you have a lot of experience in this, so I'm just wondering if there's a much briefer system, because this idea of 8 meetings in the next 2 months is overwhelming to me.
Okay.
So I'm just thinking that multiplying at times all these people, that just looks like a lot of time, and if there's some way to do it, that we can still make intelligent decisions without such excessive... such an intensive time involvement, I would really like to hear it.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of how much risk you are comfortable with. Certainly if you're going to buy a product, if you go into it without knowing all of those decisions, you might overbuy, you might not buy components that you're going to need, so there's risk involved in that. Also, if you build, there's less risk. There's more flexibility if there are pieces that you haven't defined, to define them while you're building the solution. So there's, I think, a little more flexibility in that. But yeah, it's a matter of how much risk are you willing to absorb and having undefined requirements.
Wendy? It sounded to me like you were not planning on having the whole group meet 8 times half days. So it would be a smaller subgroup. And did you have a possible number of people in mind? And you could see if people would be able to spend that number of people could spend that much time?
Right, that would be a way to approach it, is to say that we're going to just use a smaller group who will make big decisions. You know, you might come back and say, we're only going to have that informational system, period, or we're going to have that with the idea that we might extend a workflow in the future. So that smaller group can work through the details and then bring back recommendations. So that's a way to save some people time. That question too.
Well, let's not assume that we're necessarily in this group going to simply use the recommendations that were previously made. And that's a factor, and it's not determined. So we might need that time for deciding to do something that's a little different than as before.
And I would say my impression is that we did define requirements pretty fully, you know, with the idea that those might be requirements that you want over time in either scenario. So it's something like we need to understand what are the values on this that might limit that.
Well, my concern with going to only some of us doing the smaller groups is that all of us are on the hook for the full responsibility of the group. So I don't have an immediate counter suggestion for it, but I just think that this seems like a lot of detail.
Yeah, so another thing that we could do is really discuss before each meeting what we're planning to cover, and you can assess as we go whether you feel like it's worth it, whether you want Melissa and I to go back and come back with something smaller with recommendations. The decisions should be yours, but as we go, we can look for ways to reduce the burden on you for time.
Wendy? I was just going to say, from my experience in representing a number of boards, they frequently have committees, and the committee of the board will be charged with something in particular and coming back to the board with their recommendation. So to have a smaller group consider things in detail and come back to the larger group with recommendations is kind of consistent with how boards tend to operate. So I don't have a problem with that.
I agree, and I think as long as people are able to take the time to review the materials and be prepared to discuss them prior to the meeting, I think I can devote the time to this kind of weekly schedule. I don't know if we want to
also devote the
ask for other volunteers to be part of the committee, or Wendy has said yes. Beth Sheffer.
I may, if I get a clear sense of, I'm hearing a little bit, it's going to be some of the same of what was done with the previous work group, and then something more. So, of course, I don't want to necessarily put the time into some of what was already done before, but don't want to miss.
I think the key thing that I've been hearing with these discussions is that we're questioning what our core requirements and what we absolutely need, and what are things that you either don't want to pay for or just aren't something you want to consider. And I think those are the things that are important to nail down. And I do think that going through the requirements in these half-day schedules are going to lead to those decisions. How you guys are comfortable in making those determinations, I think, is kind of up to you, whether it's a smaller groups committee, or, you know, if you want to have them be discussions as a full group, or you just want to read through them and everybody make a list that says, no, that's not important, and then get everybody's opinions together at the end. You know, there's a lot of different ways you can approach it, but I think that these workshops that Leanne has laid out are a way to discuss through the process all of those things, and then as you're talking about them, we can, one, get the clarification that we need for the requirements on things like the redacted content or, you know, security measures, things like that, while you kind of are looking at it from the perspective of, is this necessary for this system to do?
I like that. I have a couple questions, just ideas for possibly getting the same amount of work done, possibly less time. For example, looking at workshop one, I know that there's a glossary in this larger packet. Is that what you're referring to there? And then I'm not sure, is there a definition draft and a context diagram also in this packet? Or what are those exactly? And perhaps those are things where, you know, we did quite a bit of discussion about those in the smaller group, that maybe we wouldn't need to spend as much time on those. Those things people could get up to speed on, and we could jump right into this Appendix B, these requirements, which is what I believe you're saying, that we'll kind of go through one by one, chunk by chunk.
Right, yeah, absolutely. We can look for opportunities to skinny this down and to leverage what we've done before. The first one, that the, you know, understanding what is the purpose here, what are the boundaries or parameters about how we're going to proceed, is important for everybody to have before diving into the requirements. But you're right, a lot of that has already been discussed. And so Melissa and I can come up with a draft and make sure that a context diagram representing, you know, the full possibilities for functionality, if we have that matching what you've already discussed, you can either send that out and you can reply, or, you know, more limited part of the agenda. So that's what that's about. That's about framing our understanding of, you know, what are the boundaries, some of the values, you know, your values around cost, timeline, and flexibility, to make sure that everybody understands what's going to guide the decision making. That's what was envisioned here for that first session, from bringing what we've already talked about.
A history factor question. Can we have a show of hands, because I don't know, who participated in the initial working group?
Okay. One thing,
so all the people who are volunteering for me.
No,
I'm sorry. I mistook the next person's name for me.
Am I the only one who would have? I suppose you have to decide who will be on the committee first, and then figure out how many people would need to get up to speed.
Or first decide if we need a committee.
Yeah, decide if we need a committee. I think if the large group isn't going to meet regularly, I think we do need to have a group meet. I will say the smaller working group, yes, it was time intensive, but it was very, very productive. And I found it very valuable for the most part. And I couldn't attend all the meetings, but the ones that I did, I got a lot out of them. So I think, personally, I think having a smaller committee is would be a good approach. We could at least try it, see how it works. If anyone has any other options, we could, I suppose we could have more regular meetings if more often, other than every 3 weeks, that would be another option. Again, it's a time when we could devote those meetings to work on this, but it will take some time to review the requirements, and I think having a robust discussion as we go through it is going to be beneficial, and it will save time on the front end.
Okay. So, my question is then, if we're going to redo everything that we've done before, you know, and those of us who can't participate this time around will suddenly find the universe changed, I mean, how do we resolve that kind of a situation?
Yeah, and I think that we want to not redo what we did before. That is a real concern. We want to be careful about that. And we focus a lot on understanding the process and what the system will support. And then we spent some time on talking about, you know, what are the requirements for how the system will support your process. But we really didn't hash out all the details. There are a lot of gaps in that. So we don't want to redo any models of how your process works right now. That's still solid. We might need to refer to it, reference it. But yeah, we don't want to redo the work that we did before. We limit it just to review and then extend from there.
Go ahead.
Can you just help me understand, having read the whole packet, not participated in the work group that developed this wonderful work, what we're trying to accomplish? Is it to bring everybody who didn't participate up to speed, or is it to get different information that you think will be different?
Yeah, there's a lot involved here.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that the new involved people are all on the same page. So we do want to bring people up to speed efficiently, but there are some people who already have a base knowledge. So that is one goal, to get everybody on the same page. But there will be new decision-making about what that means and what, you know, what is a must-have, what's a nice-have, what is a never, people never want it, don't, you know, plan on that. There are a lot of pieces here to bringing in the new group.
Just to clarify, it would be recommendations, not decision-making. The smaller group would be making recommendations to the larger group. So I don't think it's going to a matter of changing things, because this group would decide as a whole whether to take the recommendations of the smaller groups. Is that correct?
That is a thought, to save time by vetting it with a smaller group who's likely to have similar opinions, and then we'll find out if the larger group...
Bring it to the larger group for an ultimate agreement or vote, however we decide we want to make those decisions.
Hold on, Paul.
Paul?
I'll let Melissa correct me if I'm wrong, but this would have been a necessary step had we gotten funding to begin with. We did as much as we could, but this requirements gathering that we're going through is not plowing the same ground. We hope it's not plowing the same ground, but it would be absolutely necessary. The only difference is, if we had gotten funding, we'd be coming to you hat in hand, pleading with you to participate again. So this has to be done. This is one suggestion. It sounds like there's a feeling that we may want a more expedited process. Could we take some time and recommend other alternatives to you? I agree, perhaps workshop one is not necessary. And maybe there are other ways of collapsing some of the requirements. Because we have done a lot of requirements gathering. The work they did is wonderful, but we just want to make sure that we go through and get everything.
Yeah, I agree. We did a lot of requirements gathering, although from what I recall, the smaller group didn't really sit down and say, you know, these are our clear baseline requirements. So if we did have some smaller groups, a smaller group working, we wouldn't be repeating what we were doing before. We kind of ended at the point where we were ready to then go forth with the requirement determination. From my perspective, one idea I might have for maybe making this functional requirement and non-functional requirement list maybe a little less daunting is, given some of the priorities that we had identified and talked about and the values that we've been expressing, would there be a way to have you guys kind of recategorize them possibly as some of the more informational holding requirements versus more of the transactional requirements? Would that be a way to kind of cut down? Just thinking of an option, I don't know.
I think, you know, just in everything that I've heard from this group, I don't have changes to make as far as phase one and phase two. Like I mentioned before when we were talking about transactional, I really think that that is workflow. And workflow is already identified as a phase two feature. So I don't know that, you know, there would be a significant difference on that level. But I do hear that we don't want to redo the requirements, and I don't think that any of these discussions are going to drastically change what we have listed as requirements. I think the most that we're going to get is we never want to worry about that feature. That's just never going to be worth the cost to us. And it's more whittling them down, because with the pilot project, we came up with this list of requirements, and then we ended up devoting our time to evaluating what products were on the market to handle those requirements. We never went through with the group to say, yes, this one's important, this one's not important, or, you know, this would be a huge boost to our process. And I think that's kind of where we're at right now. Go through these requirements with a fine-tooth comb, decide what do you want the system to be, what, you know, is worth it to you, what isn't, and then go back and evaluate, does that shift the cost estimates on anything? There are the area of refinement in the requirements are definitely, you know, the high level issues that I think are important to tackle in order to get accurate cost estimates. So kind of focusing on those refinement areas and really getting the fine-tuned requirements there is important, and those are not in that list. But most of what's in that list is more of a, okay, yeah, it is in the right priority.
So when you say the fine-tuned requirements, is that Section 11?
Yeah, Section 11 just kind of identifies areas where the requirements were not clear, or, you know, there may be legal restrictions on the different components. Mostly those are based on electronic signatures, what that means. If you decide you never want to electronically sign documents, maybe we don't even need to discuss that any further, but there could be more requirements there. ADA compliance is another area where the executive branch has certain ADA compliance that they need to adhere to. The legislature tries to follow those, but we're not under those same, you know, compliance regulations, I don't believe. And so, you know, there may be things that we have to do differently than our current systems that we have in place. So it's those kind of areas that probably need the most focus, but we do need an overall feeling of, yes, this is an important feature, or no, it isn't.
What? Just as something I'll suggest, we do have, you know, four people willing to meet to devote some intensive time, which is approximately half of the, you know, official committee plus you guys. What if we, when I look at this list, it seems like requirements 2 and 3, I don't know if that could occur in 1 half-day. 4 also seems valuable as well. Possibly being able to meld it with the beginning of 5. What if between now and the next meeting, we try to have as many of these workshops as feasible for those of us that are willing to commit the time, and then at the next meeting, we have as one of our main agenda items that we will go over, not only have a bring back to the group for part of the time, but then as a larger group, we will review or go through Section 11, the kind of fine-tuned requirements, where I think having all the buy-in would be really important, and see how it works, and possibly modify the committee work or see if there's a different idea that has come up. Just given that we have 20 minutes left and want to make sure we kind of know where we're going.
Wendy?
Interesting. I just have a related question. I'm trying to look at how this section 11 overlaps with the workshops, and I know you talked about phase two is workflow, and so I don't have an understanding, for example, of why we would need a spell check validation if we're just uploading documents. So these are things I don't understand, and I'm not going to be able to make a recommendation on whether we need to have a spell check unless I understand why we would need it if we're just uploading documents rather than creating them in the system.
So we were thinking that what might be helpful is they have more context and they have your process that we're talking through, and that's where your mind is thinking about how you might enlist the system. And then it would be on Melissa and I to go back and look at how that would affect the requirements and bring those discussions back to the right context.
Okay, so then you'd bring that back to the group rather than us trying as a whole group to figure this out. I mean, I'm just saying, because we're different knowledge levels, and I'm at the lower end of the knowledge level, I admit, I think it's going to be hard to discuss all of these requirements at our next meeting and go through with a fine-tooth comb, where some of us don't have the background to understand why that's needed. And do other people understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me... Well, first of all, Wendy, I don't agree that you're at the low end of things, because I think that these things, even for those of us who participated, these requirements still are somewhat mysterious in this level of detail. Beth, are you giving me a blank look? Or
no, I don't mean anything by my look.
Oh, okay. So, but do you agree with, what is your take on these requirements? I mean, do you grasp them all and understand them? Or I find that they still seem very unfamiliar to me, even though I participated in the previous round discussions. These are highly technical and,
there is a lot of detail.
Yeah, so... I have a lot of questions about them, but I don't see how I'm going to participate in the discussion about this because I don't have the time to devote to this right now as much as I would like to. I mean, in a perfect world, I'd be there with all of you all in all these meetings, but I can't. So,
Would there be a way to pass your questions on, do you think?
Well, I'm trying to figure out how I can participate. You know, when we do like Wendy was describing, we have boards, we have advisory committees, and people work through representative capacities, but we don't have that set up here, so I don't know if, will you be sending the material out to all of us? I don't know if that would be helpful or not helpful to us, but, how do we, because I'm really not very comfortable with the idea that there'll be another round of decisions made that, no way to know what's being made or how it's being made.
Go ahead.
So what I'm wondering is whether we can have, rather than have a separate subgroup, just invite everybody to the more frequent meetings, and those of us who can make it can come and try to make these decisions. And as Leanne said, try to spell out really clearly what's going to be on the agenda for that item and what can be reviewed in advance of that item and what decision, and then make decisions and then identify the seminal meetings at which we're going to say yay or nay conclusively instead of just reviewing and discussing.
Do you want to turn your mic off if you're not talking for a sec? No, yeah, thanks.
Oh, I think that's a very good idea. The only problem I see with it is it's going to be harder to find a half day every week that the whole group schedule looks open. And then maybe the thing to do is the people who are committing to do the half day, make sure their schedule is open for that half day, and then invite everybody and they can come or they can adjust their schedule or not. But I think it's going to be very difficult to find a half day every week for the entire group.
Well, I think we can try to find a time that works for as many, and as if you can come for part of the time, come and have your questions heard. I'm happy to meet with anyone, talk on the phone, and try to then bring your questions to the group, or you can send them in via email. I think we can try to make sure that we're having an open conversation, and then when we come back as a larger group, we can send it out ahead of time, kind of what we reviewed, the decisions were made, why we picked these requirements to be the baseline, why these we put as, at a higher level, and why
maybe kind of much more detailed than we normally would if we were all there. And so we can at least have some familiarity possibly before our next meeting. We could try it, see how it goes.
Well, I have another question though. Does this group, well, when we started the meeting, Wendy had some definite preferences about where we would go, about informational and less about the transactional. And then we had this discussion where it seemed to me that everybody was supporting the idea of a minimal approach rather than the more having all the bells and whistles. I mean, is that something that we can say we have a consensus on at this point? And that would be the what would be driving the next group of discussions?
When you come back.
Yeah, I just want to clarify what my proposal was. My proposal with that, we go through with the minimalist requirements first, but the, and then sort them out in terms of what requirements would be for the minimal plus what would be for the broader, I won't say, would be nice. You don't like that term?
Robust.
The robust, the more robust, but separate them out so that we could get the really, quite frankly, get the cost analysis done better so that we can see what the cost will be. And if, you know, if it's not going to cost that much more, I am very concerned because our agency does so much rulemaking and we're not a big agency. I'm very concerned about the cost. So I just wanted to clarify that I wasn't saying just take the minimalist approach. I was saying separate it out.
I agree. I understand. I understood. And that's what I'm suggesting is that we take that, that's the way we focus it rather than trying to move in a two-pronged way, which is figuring out the minimalist and also doing the both for the initial launch.
Okay. Beth?
I kind of covered what I was going to say. I just wanted to make it clear that there is no consensus yet. You asked whether it was a minimalist consensus. I don't think the group has come to any consensus. I think
okay.
A lot of us are feeling like we have to, you can't do all or nothing. You have to go through piece by piece. And that sounds like that's what Wendy was describing.
Okay.
I want to know the cost. That's what I want to know.
As a group, do we feel that an approach that would be beneficial to take is to, however way we review the requirements, to create kind of two separate lists, one that is a more minimal baseline list, we'll get a cost for that, and the other would be the robust list that would be added on top of the base list, and those would be kind of the two tracks that we could be working with in terms of cost comparison. Seems like everyone's nodding, and okay. So that can at least be our guiding approach. Melissa and Leanne, the requirements list that you put together, again, I keep asking, knowing that that's kind of our perspective that we want to take, is there any way that you can help us filter them, either by the different topics, or are we essentially only needing to look at the functional requirements then, because the non-functional requirements are more on the technical side?
I would definitely say functional requirements are where your focus needs to be. We can handle the non-functional requirements that result based on your functional requirements. So I would not be overly concerned with non-functional, and I would not be overly concerned with knowing which bucket it should go into, functional versus non. We can definitely do that for you. And then as far as the requirements being daunting or maybe difficult to understand, just by reading through them, Leanne did prepare those user stories, and I think that is kind of how she was envisioning doing these workshops, and that is more how you interact with the system, and then we would handle how they map to the specific requirements and kind of keep that up to date for you, because mostly with users, at least in my experience talking with them, people do much better when they are presented with how they do their work versus what the system needs to do. What the system needs to do is what we as developers need to know to build it, but it really doesn't, it doesn't make a lot of sense to go through them one by one in that case. It's better to kind of look at, what do you want the system to do? How do you interact with the system? What are you tracking? Things like that. So I would go as far to say, is we would take charge to kind of keep the list of requirements into sync. And if, as we're talking about things, we feel like we need to really go into detail with what the requirements document says, we can definitely do that as needed. But that's the general approach I would take to evaluating them.
I would just add that Melissa and I will be looking for whether your decisions have an impact on a full component that really changes the picture versus some decisions that might just mean, well, we need to have a different configuration, or that's just in addition to a drop-down list, or, you know, so we'll be listening for decisions that really change the picture. We might need to come back to you and say, now this is what that means. So you can shift some of that burden our way to really evaluate what is the impact of your decisions on the full requirements and how it breaks down into different components. And I would also add with the functional and non-functional, I know that you're on the line for both, and that's in the law. Basically, what that just means is, you know, how do you want the system to work as you interact with it? That's your functional. And your functional is how well, how much of an investment do you want to make into this system? Is okay that it's just quick and dirty and not very robust, or do you really need it to be robust? And I think Melissa will have a good sense for those requirements, and if we may need to ask you some questions if there are some decisions around that. But I think Melissa's right that a lot of that burden can be on us.
Okay, so we're almost at the end of our time. So do we want to come to some consensus about how to proceed? Do we want to try having some weekly meetings between now and the next large group meeting? The next two meetings are listed on the agenda, September 14th and October 4th, both held here. Thank you to Rebecca for hosting us. And then there are some future meetings I also scheduled as well. So do we want to vote on how to proceed? Do we want to set up some weekly meetings, and those that can attend when they can attend, and we'll get some guidance from Melissa and Leanne about what kind of homework or pre-work you need to do to be familiar with at those particular meetings, depending on the progress you make, and then we'll bring that information back to the larger meeting and send out possibly written updates as we go, at least as a trial until the next meeting in September, and then we can evaluate if there are other options. Ideas. Mm-hmm. Does that sound like a plan? Mm-hmm. Okay, so I will work with, maybe we can meet at the revisor in that meeting room, depending on if there's enough space. We can work on logistics and let you all know. Does the meeting schedule that I set up of a larger group every 3 weeks amenable to the group? Does that seem good? Okay, I just took the liberty of trying to get some things on the calendar. Is there anything else that anyone else would like to bring up in the next few minutes? No? Okay, then our meeting is adjourned.